Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast, brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm Paul David, one of your co-hosts. I'll kick it over to Will.
Will Gazzi-Pete here, co-host number two.
And we're joined today by Denora Gattacho, Chief Executive Officer at DoSomething.org. Welcome to the show, Denora.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here today.
Yeah. We know you're busy and we're big fans of Do Something and all the good work you're doing in activism, digital organizing, and we really appreciate you taking the time today. So thanks again. As always, we're going to jump right in, but first, we'd love to just hear like a high-level overview of who you are and what you do, Denora. Can give our audience just kind of a quick briefing.
So hi, everyone. I'm Denora Gattacho. I'm the CEO of DoSomething.org. We are the online hub for youth-centered activism. I came on board as CEO almost 2 years ago, coming to this work as an attorney, as a mother, as a nonprofit leader, really who's dedicated her life to the intersection of youth civic participation and creating a democracy that's more accessible, inclusive, and representative, but with young people at the center. Really excited to be at the helm of a now almost 30-year-old organization. Do Something was born in the early 90s at a very different moment in our society. Your listeners may know of Andrew Hsu, formerly of Melrose Place fame, and his childhood best friend, Michael Sanchez. They co-founded Do Something in 1993, really at a moment when, for them, what they hoped to achieve was creating an organization that could be a home for young people and really make volunteerism as cool as sports. And 30 years later, I'm really proud to say that we've accomplished that, right? Like, young people all around the world, not just here in the US where I'm based, know the importance of volunteering and giving back in their community. But there's so much more than that that young people need to be focused on, especially as you think about Gen Alpha, right, coming of age right now, and them being digital natives and them being the very young people who this generation of Do Something needs to be able to meet the needs of and make sure that we're helping fuel them in their activism. And so I'm excited to bring my expertise and passion for young people and democracy, a very interesting and wonky combo sometimes, to Do Something to really help us forge that next path forward.
Gen Z made me feel old. Gen Alpha is like, oh, come on, man. Stop it now.
You're like, wait, I'm still young, right? I'm still young.
I'm just, cool. Just getting a hold of TikTok. Like, don't.
Got a new generation.
I'm in the same boat. Same boat. For me, at least, I cut my teeth as an activist or an advocate as a young teenager. I had a son when I was a senior in high school and really had my own formative moment of like advocating for myself and my educational opportunity. And so at the time, I didn't know that like what I was doing was advocacy or even that I was going to be an activist in quotation marks. And what's fascinating and powerful to me is like new generations of young people, right, who are digital natives, like they walk everywhere with this gadget in their hand. They are coming of age in a very different societal moment, right? I get in trouble all the time, so my kids will listen to this and they'll be like, oh, there you go. You're always talking about DeAndre, the 26-year-old. You never talk about us. And so I have 10 and 12-year-old daughters who, right, for them, they are that digital age generation, right, Gen Alpha. And it's interesting because their formative moments are in the U.S. having Barack Obama as a Black president, right? Like young kids, that was their image of what a president could be, having technology at their disposal at all times, and then just navigating one of the most unprecedented and disruptive moments in our life with COVID and its aftermath. And so it's very interesting and powerful to see what is this generation going to accomplish, right? And how will they hopefully use technology for good and learn from some of the trial and errors, if we will, over the last several decades and use, you know, figure out how to do even better than we have at integrating technology into their lives and making sure they use it to fuel the future.
Well, that's a great segue into our pieces that we shared with you, some articles that are timely and kind of touch on some of the issues that you're involved with at DoSomething.org. You mentioned tech, and one of the first pieces we shared with you was from Phys.org, talking about the presence of women in STEM. And just to broaden it a bit, I mean, the piece talks about how women are, you know, typically blamed for things unfairly in STEM, and they're not, you know, given opportunities, they're discouraged from getting involved. And we've heard this, you know, kind of over again in the STEM field. I'd be curious to hear your perspective on, you know, how that's happening in STEM specifically, but also in digital activism and sort of on the ground activism spaces and, you know, the movement to get women more engaged and more involved and frankly, to tear down some of these structures that are limiting them.
I think that's the fundamental piece I want to talk about. And what I think is so powerful about the moment we're living in is that, right, I'm a Gen Xer. So I'll just say to the audience, like, I used to call myself millennial adjacent, but that gets me nowhere, right? Because millennials are old millennials are in their 40s now. Yeah. What is key in this moment, maybe this is, it makes more sense and is more palpable for me both as a mother, but also in my work at Do Something, is that Gen Z is entering the workforce. And yet there are still these barriers that are preventing women from achieving, especially in the fields of STEM, right? And so Do Something has done a lot of work over the years in partnership with the 3M Foundation, as well as more recently with General Motors Foundation, to really think about how to tear down some of those barriers that exist in the STEM field. We actually have a campaign that we're running now called Make STEM 100%, and really are focused on how to provide more high school students, especially those from communities that are historically underrepresented in STEM, with opportunities for being exposed to STEM. Because if it isn't happening in your middle schools and your high schools, by the time you get to college, you're even more at a disadvantage, right? And what we know that is only 20% of high school graduates are prepared for college-level coursework in STEM. And so when you think about who that's impacting, in this specific example, you know, in the article you shared, it's women, but it's also young people from historically marginalized communities. And so if STEM careers are not even the careers of the future, the careers of now, how are we therefore breaking down many of those silos and barriers that prevent communities that have historically been marginalized from having economic opportunity and mobility? And so we really are focused on breaking down those barriers. We've been able to provide resources to young people about careers in STEM fields that they may have never heard of, right? Not everybody's going to be a coder or an engineer, but what are some of the other non-traditional careers that young people can pursue? But also we've equipped them with the tools they need to advocate to their educators and their administrators in their schools to have more STEM learning in their school buildings. Because if they're not getting that STEM learning, then they're never going to be prepared, let alone be able to enter a workforce and be able to achieve and break some of those ceilings. And so, you know, it's not surprising to see articles like that written, but it's more about then what do we do? And so Do Something is doing our part to make sure we're breaking down some of those barriers in partnership with, you know, the foundations that support us in our work. But there's more that needs to be done within the sector itself.
Yeah, I appreciate the, is it called the STEM 100 program that you're running? Do Something? Did I get that
Make right? STEM 100%.
Make STEM 100%. And as a former teacher, I mean, I taught English, but I saw, it's incredible to see it on the ground when it's like happening within a school building and you see this gentle and sometimes not so subtle prodding of young women, you know, away from, you know, STEM fields. And you're just kind of like, and I remember just being like, what's going on here? Like, why is this brilliant child who's like excellent at various elements of STEM being nudged away from it and into, you know, whatever else? And it's just, it's really shocking to see it on the ground.
Well, it starts so much earlier. I didn't know you were an educator, but it starts at like third grade for girls. Yeah. It's literally this moment where the research shows that young girls start fading into the background and not raising their hand, especially when they're in co-ed academic settings. And so it's really important both to make sure that educators feel equipped to support their students, but also encourage them to pursue STEM, but also that we are making sure that we're mindful of those historic and systemic barriers and how do we eliminate those as well.
Yeah, I think the reason a lot of like organizations do shy away from it is like they look into the problem genuinely trying to like, you know, like we want to hire from more diverse backgrounds. And, you know, like as you said, in the pieces we shared, it's women, but really it's a problem just for men, every underrepresented community. And they look into it and they go, oh, well, to fix this, we need to fix society. And that's a little bit bigger than we as a tech company have on our agenda. So we'll just slap a quota on it and like hope that does the change. And actually it takes like, you know, society to just be equal before that, you know, that's the long-term fix. I think that is why, or at least that's certainly where a lot of folk in our sector have got to, as a bit of a semi-reasonable but also a bit of an easy out of like, oh well, you know, this is a bit bigger than us, we can't solve it, we need our society to basically fix itself before we have a pool of candidates that we can pick from.
But that, I think that's respectfully right. So let's be honest, and we're in a moment where especially Gen Z is incredibly clear about the importance of systemic change and not these like band-aid solutions. It's going to require all hands on deck. So we can't all say and scream from the mountaintops more STEM and more careers in STEM without also addressing those historic and systemic inequities that have plagued the sector, right? And so even for me, I come to this work as an attorney and as a nonprofit leader, and I'm like, but I run an online activism hub, right? And so I had to, you know, I spent the last 2 years learning a lot about tech, a lot more than I knew prior to coming to Do Something. And I think even for me, there are barriers to like, well, is an African-American woman prepared to lead a tech company, right? And so I think it's important just to have those conversations out loud, but also for people to say, wait, if that is happening, if young people are interested, or if this Black woman leading this company is interested, how do we open those doors and educate and enlighten folks so that we can achieve, right? Because we know, and history proves itself, and I'd be remiss, at least in the US, it is Black History Month here, right, to note how many contributions come from the African-American community that go unrepresented or unrecognized. And so it's important to note that there are creators, there are innovators in all communities, and if we're actually going to tap into our best in society, then we've got to cultivate all of those leaders, regardless of their background.
And I do think that message is getting through to a lot of tech, like, and it's what we're certainly seeing is, like, you're never really sure what the motivation is, whether it's like a genuine belief in it or just that, shit, if we don't jump on this bandwagon, then we're in trouble. But companies are finally having their arm twisted enough that there is meaningful change. So yeah, I think it is getting through. And like you said, for Gen Z as a workforce, they just, you know, their minimum is what used to be very high standards for millennials in terms of kind of corporate social responsibility and systemic change. So there are, you know, there's a lot of encouragement, I think, that we're seeing on the ground, although it's still a very, very long and hard road ahead for sure. We kind of spoke about diversity in tech, but one of the other things that we're obviously seeing, like, a bit of a slowdown at the moment and a bit of a weird market in terms of, you know, jobs and hiring. The second piece we kind of shared with you, it focused on the five major sort of online providers of, you know, Facebook, Netflix, Apple, etc., but kind of was talking about wider the tech sector and how pretty much all of the major players in the tech sector are kind of currently downsizing or saying they're going to be downsizing. We're just wondering, like, you know, if you've seen anything from your side being in that world, that slowdown affecting specifically, you know, those previous quotas of equity and inclusion and, you know, of certain hiring, they're genuinely the first casualty of any economic downturn. So yeah, just curious to get your take on that piece and kind of if you've seen anything on the ground that, you know, in your particular viewpoint.
You know, I think, again, it builds on the conversation we just had, right? And I think to the extent that there's the slowdown and even the layoffs, if you will, those layoffs usually have an adverse impact on communities of color and historically marginalized communities, right? So the people who are newer to the sector, right? And what we are seeing, even for us in our work, right, because we often have those partnerships with those companies that are deep in tech, is like a slowdown in the partnership and a slowdown in, like, thinking about how to use tech for good, right? Because so much of that work happens in the silos of those big corporate office centers, but now in people's homes, right, where they're zooming into wherever they work, if you will. And what we're seeing then is just like as a slowdown in the willingness and the interest in partnering and kind of learning how to work with the nonprofit sector and support the work that's happening there. And I think that has a disparate impact on the nonprofit sector, which, you know, exists by and large to play that bridge between what's happening in the private sector and what's happening in government, right? And where a lot of innovation is also happening that can be scaled and buttressed by the tech sector. And so for me and my team, that's what we've been grappling with, is like, as we are at this crucial evolution moment, right? I mentioned Do Something is at our 30th anniversary this year, and it's a very important inflection point for us, right? We're thinking about how to evolve a company that has incredible brand recognition and respect in the marketplace to meet the needs of the next generation of change makers. And so, you know, what's fascinating is that, like I said, Andrew and Michael had this vision of making Do Something be the home for young people with volunteerism and making volunteerism as cool as sports. And now I run a company that needs to figure out how to engage and respectfully fuel digital native young people to be engaged, right? And so then really thinking about how do we leverage tech for good? And where are the places where we've learned from what's happened in the past that we want to replicate or evolve and scale? And what are the things that are just not working, right? And so without having some of those partners in tech to help us figure that out and really iterate and evolve on that because of all the contraction and evolution in the sector writ large, it's an interesting and, you know, somewhat complex moment to be navigating that, right? Because I think we are, even as a company, thinking about, okay, if young people are already convening online, and this kind of goes to one of the other articles you shared, and thinking about gaming as the space where they're existing, like, how do we meet them where they are, right? Because the goal is not to necessarily disrupt those natural environments where young people are already convening and engaging in activism, but to meet them there and then help fuel those journey in those specific spaces. And so, but without the tech partners who can help us achieve that, we're kind of missing a key moment. And so it's really this difficult, I would say, moment for all of us to navigate, because we're like, one, what's going to happen, right? Like, when does the bottom, you know, when do we hit the bottom, if you will? And then two, while all of the evolution contraction is happening, what happens to everyone else who's kind of in the same orbit, but not in the sector squarely.
That's a really good lead into this third piece, which is from an unlikely source. It's the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. We like to spread it around, you know, just kind of shake things up.
It was a good read.
Yeah, when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay. Shout out to Shakira, who organizes all of our pieces for the podcast. But yeah, I mean, I think it touched on, you know, regardless of where the piece is from, it touched on like kind of the how of what you do. And, you know, this notion of like raising awareness is good, but getting folks to action is better. I appreciated how the piece talked about it's more important than ever to move those connections offline and engage others face to face. And that this idea that true change usually happens in real life relationships with others. So like as someone who runs a digital activism organization, super curious to hear your opinion about like bridging that offline and sort of on the ground gap there.
Well, first, shout out to Shakira for all of the research there. I was like, oh, this is enlightening.
Yeah.
And I came to do something, like I said, almost 2 years ago, but I had spent my career really on the other side of the table, right? Really thinking about civic participation in the grassroots and more in real life version of the world. And so there was a huge tension for me. I'll just be candid and sharing with your listeners and coming to this tech platform, right? And understanding how do I have the expertise, if you will, to lead a company like this. But as we think about Do Something's role and really perpetuating and fueling digital activism, is that all for good, right? And so in many of my past public speaking engagements and thought leadership, I would talk about slacktivism and how we don't want young people to engage in slacktivism. And then I got to Do Something and I was like, wait, are we unintentionally causing slacktivism in young people? And so even as I was coming on board and evaluating the work of the organization over the last, not just like 30 years, but even the last 10 to 15, one of the things I really had to grapple with is like, yes, we can use technology for good, but then what does it mean to make sure that when young people click something, that we are not fueling that kind of clickbaitism, right? And that we get young people to be like, oh, I did something because I clicked here, right? Like clicking here and reading a blurb does not equate to taking action. And it for sure doesn't mean that you took systemic action. And so coming on board to Do Something on the heels of, I'm not even just gonna call it a racial reckoning, I'll call it the intersectional reckoning for equity and justice, right? Led largely by young people, on the heels of the pandemic, on the heels of the great reshuffling or resignation or whatever we call it. But really like in this moment, as I've been calling it, of like COVID clarity, like we all are supposed to be rethinking what we do and why we do it and how we do it. It became evident to me that while that worked at a different time, it doesn't work in the same way now. And so what Do Something is doing to address that is one, being more intentional about how we engage directly with young people through our platform and being clear with them that just because you read something and you had your awareness raised, that's not it. That's not an activist, right? And if you actually mean to change the world, which is what I hear young people fervently saying, you have to go deeper. And so we as a platform and an online hub for youth activism need to be offering deeper engagement for our members and young people who come to our platform beyond just that first awareness level. You know, I have a young daughter, a 12-year-old, and she just got her first phone and it was like painful to give this young lady her phone, like painful. I was like, let's just not do it. Like, and my husband was like, are you going to renege on a promise? Is that what you're going to do as a mother? And I was like, well, I set this goal of 12, like way back when, and now it's here. And I just don't think she's ready. But what's powerful is like in the former iteration of Do Something, a young person needed their awareness raised, right? So they'd come to a platform like us, they read a thing and they'd take in action. In the vein of this current generation, right? So we call our 12-year-old Googleicious, because anytime we say anything, if she doesn't understand what it is, she's like Googling it. And I'm like, wait, can we just have a dialogue about it? Like, let me ask a question if you don't know what it is before you just like go to the internet. And so what that means is that when we are engaging those Gen Alphas, right, as they come of age, they don't need their awareness raised. What they need is clarity about sources of truth. They need to understand that once you understand the sources of truth, then how do you use that information to affect change? And is it change at the like micro level? Is it change at the medium or the macro level? And so that's what we're evolving our platform to provide more of. It's like, yes, I want young people to come to our website and learn and be educated about a topic, but not in a, I'm going to raise your awareness way, because that's a relic of a prior generation. If we're actually going to be a part of movement building with young people, one, it has to go deeper. And then two, to the point you raised, it can't just be online, right? In a post-COVID world, young people don't want to just be online anymore, right? And so we are doing a lot of work here in New York in particular, where Do Something's headquarters are, to convene young people in person and really give them an opportunity to develop those interpersonal skills that, you know, some of them respectfully are lacking and don't know how to problem solve in person, don't know how to have conversation or cross divide, and don't know how to push for that systemic change they want in the halls of their state houses, et cetera. And so for us, it's got to be a combo of both. It's got to be the online activism that is our hallmark and, you know, kind of the way that we've historically engaged young people. But then we also need the in real life component too.
And in many ways, what you're talking about is kind of a conversation we have with our clients a lot, which is like web traffic is a vanity metric. The only thing that's important from web traffic is how many emails you get capture, and then emails are a vanity metric. The only thing that's important about emails is how many people respond to the email you send, and then the amount of people who respond to the emails you capture is a vanity metric. The only thing that really truly matters at the end of that entire funnel is how many people you convince in this, for us, because a marketing agency, it's to buy a product. For you guys, you know, it's to actually get activated and be a part of those movements. So yeah, I think there is almost like a wider, across almost every industry in the world, sort of a rethinking of like, we need to stop just chasing clicks and start chasing meaningful engagement and meaningful community building, whether that's to get people using an app or to get people, you know, engaged and caring about the social issues and actively trying to fight systemic problems.
That's right. That's absolutely right. We call it technological metrics over here, but yeah. I love the vanity metrics aspect. And it is. It's a great moment, right? As tech is beyond its infancy phase, if you will, to be able to reevaluate and get its own COVID clarity about like what's working, what's not working. And then how do we ensure that we don't go off the cliff, right? Because what I am most nervous about, respectfully to the tech sector, is that we are going to, you know, push young people in particular too far, right? Like you see all these studies about today, even in the New York Times, about young girls and their mental health and their feelings of isolation because of so much of their lives are online. And so it's like, there is a responsibility when we think about tech for good of like, what are we actually trying to achieve? And does that mirror hold up to what we initially thought we were trying to achieve? And if it's different, then how do we evolve in light of the data and the research and what, you know, the metrics are telling us? And so for sure, we're doing that here at Do Something. And my hope is that we will do that across the entire sector to make sure we're still centering the voices of those people who we hope to attract, inspire, and activate for good, not just for kind of the bottom line, if you will.
Yeah, a follow-up question I sort of had, which I thought interesting, maybe a little unfair for you, is like, do you think like digital has been a net positive or a net negative for, you know, not just young people, but just society at large, and maybe keeping it specifically to the activism space, because it's such a double-edged sword. It's like, yeah, it's probably easier than ever to organize a group of like-minded folk and get them together via various social platforms. But then, yeah, those same social platforms massively undermine the interpersonal skills and confidence of some of their users. So it's sort of, you know, it's we constantly have a kind of dialogue about like, is it, and you know, it's kind of at the heart of the podcast, it is, can tech save us? So I'd just be super curious to know, like, how do you view kind of digital at large and some of those errors that it's made and then some of the benefits it's had?
I mean, well, we're going to have a fair and balanced answer here, right? Because I do think, I was like, I already knew where it was going. And I was like, okay. The honest answer is, right, tech has played and will continue to play a role in addressing societal challenges and also being able to optimize and make our lives more efficient. So like full stop, exclamation point. And like any other sector, there are pluses and minuses. And that's what I think when I mentioned, it's a moment for all of us to reflect on like, what was the rationale when tech was in its infancy and we were trying to, you know, think about those solutions, what were we trying to achieve? And then is it actually achieving that end, right? And I think there are lessons learned for all of us, right? One of them is that we need to be clear again about those, is tech going to help us solve some of the biggest societal problems we're facing? And is it going to be, how do those innovations get to scale is one of the things I think we're all thinking about, right? I think there is more work that can be done to think about the role that tech plays in some of the equity conversations that we started with earlier in the podcast, and not just from a racial, but also from a gender, socioeconomic lens, and really thinking about what are some of those kind of high level solves and how can those come to bear. But the honest answer is, for at least the foreseeable future, we still need humans, right? To be able to lead change and really think about how we are taking ownership of and responsibility for how we interact with these platforms. And so I would say, sure, net positive for sure, but it's not, but no sector is perfect. And so what I hope is that, again, we'll use this moment, right? We're coming up next year on the 20th anniversary of Facebook. Like think about what were these platforms created to achieve, and are they achieving that? And if there's a different societal need, how are we evolving? I'm saying the we, I don't sit at Facebook or Meta, but how are we evolving the needs of the platforms and the apps to meet the needs of society, right? Because society has definitely advanced in the last two decades. And so how do we think about how those innovations keep pace with societal needs and adaptations?
I love the integrity of the idea of like focusing on societal needs and then building the platforms accordingly, because I feel like we've kind of done the opposite and sort of like built platforms and been like, oh shit, this is the societal outcome from it. You know what I mean? So, and I think that's really, really problematic. And we've sort of let the market and its quote unquote invisible hand just like whip us in the behind a little bit. So yeah. Well, I think it's a good opportunity to jump into your work with DoSomething.org and just to learn a bit more about it. You mentioned kind of having a 2-year learning and onboarding period. Super curious to hear, you know, how that went and where you've landed, you know, as of today, and just kind of like where you want to take the organization and where you see your work headed.
So I'm just going to say it again because I'm super excited. It's our 30th anniversary this year. And so funny enough, we predate some of these big, you know, tech movements as in proximity to young people, I would say, right? And how they were thinking about tech. I joined, like I said, at a very different moment than where Andrew and Michael's founding vision was, and a time where society was grappling with, like, what's our new normal? How do we deal with the intersection of equity and justice? How do we deal with where we have been and where we want to go and take ownership of that in a more realistic way? And what I realized over the last 2 years, but especially during my first year as CEO, was like, young people are so incredibly passionate about pushing for change. And it's not, right, the change of my Gen X generation of like incremental, you'll just take a little bit here and a little bit there and we'll get there. Like big societal transformation is what young people, and in this instance, I'm talking about 13 to 25 year olds, are craving, right? They want big changes. They want to see the whole landscape reset. And I think there's power in that, right? Like that energy, that optimism, that fervent push is what we need, right? Because I do think we're at a big societal turning, right? And some of the science and kind of research out there shows that like every 4 or 5 generations, we hit this big societal push where like we need to move forward. And I think that's where we are right now. So I keep calling that the COVID clarity moment. And some of us are like clarifying our lives. And some of us are like, wait, can't we just go back to 2019? And they're like, no, we can't actually. What I realized to be true is I was kind of doing this listening tour and taking stock of what Do Something and the sector at large and youth development and civic engagement have been doing, is that it wasn't quite keeping pace, right? To the point I just made about the need for tech to look in the mirror. It wasn't quite keeping pace with evolutions, right? And new generations coming of age, right? So we talk about social impact, but what it hadn't done is think about, you know, everybody's using terms like CSR and ESG and like, how do we fuel young people? But they hadn't changed the corporate structures for how that engagement happened. And so a lot of the time I spent in my first year was like looking at what we as a company had done well, but what did we need to do better? And then how did we evolve the way that we're meeting with young people to help really fuel that new generation to come of age? And so excited about our strategic planning process, which took us, you know, almost a year, came out of it really clarified about our North Star and how we're going to move forward. So our new mission is, you know, Do Something exists to fuel young people to change the world. We realized that so much of the way that we had engaged with largely Gen X and millennials was about lighting all these civic sparks. Like, we're going to get you activated. You're going to find a cause you care about. You're going to take an action. But we weren't pushing them towards systemic change, right? So in a moment when we know the most pressing issues facing young people are climate action, mental health, education, and racial and social justice, like, what were we doing as a company to make sure that, yes, people understand the issue, but that they actually are going to do something more than say, I clicked here, right? So back to that point about tech for good, if you will. And really one of the best ways for us to achieve that mission is to think about how we can help young people work together collectively to change the world by taking action on those most pressing issues. And so we know that we've had some really big accomplishments over the last 3 decades, right? We've registered over 375,000 young people to vote in the last three national election cycles in the US, so right, 2018, 2020, and 2022. We've given out almost $2 million in scholarships in the last decade to young people as a way to help eliminate some of those barriers that they face economically, but also to help incentivize them to see themselves as volunteers and civic leaders. Young people have spent over 25,000 hours in the last year volunteering in their communities and helping with everything from recycling to donating clothes to providing mental health resources to their peers or even volunteering in soup kitchens and food pantries. But if we're actually going to change the world in ways big and small, we have to go beyond that. Like, volunteerism is the entry point, but it's not the end game, right? And so for us, we're really thinking about how we make sure that we're giving young people multiple layers and levels of engagement. Knowing one, let's just be honest, young people aren't a monolith. So we're not going to say like all Gen Z is going to do the same thing all the time. But if we're not giving them more opportunities to level up that engagement, then we've missed the opportunity and we've missed the chance to help fuel that journey. And so a big part of our direction forward in this 30th anniversary year, did I mention it's our 30th anniversary year?
Keeping a tally.
Is to make sure that we are evolving to meet the needs of new generations of young people. And so gaming has got to be a part of the equation for us. You know, our product and engineering team is really thinking hard about that and that kind of journey with young people to help understand how are we meeting them where they are, not trying to pull them out. Cause like, I think we've passed that moment. We're going to be like, come out of the platform, come over here. But actually then how do you have gaming for good? Right. And how do you have more tech integrations for good than we currently have? And so that's what's really exciting to me in this moment is like, I'm proud of the work that Do Something has done over the last 30 years. And I want to do my part to ensure that we remain a relevant and powerful force for good in partnership with young people for the next 30 years.
Just as a quick follow-up, it does raise a question of like yes, meeting people where they are, but sort of like I wonder if sort of the average like Gen Z or Gen Alpha gamer wants to be engaged about sort of, you know, political issues or activism while they're gaming. So like super curious to hear about the intermingling of those pursuits, I guess, and sort of like, I don't know, just the interest and like if maybe they'll be a little bit put off and like, hey, I'm just trying to have a good time here and relax. I don't want to be engaged on, you know, X political issue of the day. Just, yeah, curious to hear your thoughts on that.
We still send SMSs to young people. And at a time 15 years ago, when the CEO at the time thought, is that possible? Can we push SMSing to young people? Can they take action through their phone? Nancy Lublin was like ahead of her time in that. And it still is true. What's fascinating is I have, you know, I'll mention those Gen Alpha kids again, they are gaming already, right? And so they're in Minecraft or they're in other platforms. And guess who's there? Luxury brands. Luxury brands are marketing to young kids, right? And so I want to be adjacent to those luxury brands because those kids outside of those platforms are having conversations in their school buildings or in their communities or sometimes even via SMS about the issues of the day and what's happening in the world. And so I think it behooves us to be in those platforms and to make that value proposition ring true as opposed to saying like, oh, we can't be there because it's this, you know, it's a safe space that wasn't intended for that purpose. I think to the extent that tech, and this goes back to our earlier conversation, that tech and the nonprofit sector and even government have to work more closely, they should be inviting us into those platforms to say, like, we want young people to understand how they can do good and how these tech companies and the products we're designing can be a force for good. And so my hope is that partnerships like that can exist and that we can find ways where it is cool, exciting, dynamic, and not meh, if you will, for us to be in those platforms and really meeting young people where they already are.
Yeah, if Wendy's can sell hamburgers in the gaming universe, I think we can definitely sell systemic change. Mm. You mentioned a few of the success stories that you sort of had already. I was just, maybe if you could pick out like a couple of your favorite things in that you've seen or been a part of with Do Something in the time you've been there.
So exciting. So many things, right? I think I would, because I'm a democracy ninja and I care so much about young people and civic engagement, I'm proud of our work to register young people to vote and to really get them to understand their own civic personality and how that motivates them to be civically engaged, right? I think we often talk about civic engagement qua civic engagement, like we all have to be engaged. It's like, what does that mean? And what's the entry point for you? And so we've done a lot of work to evolve how we're engaging with young people and actually gamify, like, oh, remember how you took that quiz that like figured out your personality online and that makes you like this or like that? Like, we all seek community. And so how do we then take that civic identity and apply that to then how you'll be engaged? If you know that you're more likely to be the organizer or the person protesting in the street, then how do you then come to Do Something's platform and get engaged in campaigns or programs that allow you to further that journey, right? Because then you know, like, oh, this is how I lead. This is how I want to be civically engaged. So I'm proud of that work, and we're really excited to build on that in the lead up to the 2024 election cycles here in the U.S. because it's going to be a big moment. Between 2020 and 2024, 17 million new young people will come of age and be a part of our electorate. if not surpassing their grandparents, getting very close. And so that's a tipping the scale moment, right? Like, I keep saying I'm a Gen Xer, so we've this little tiny generation that like works hard and gets things done. But Gen Z has the power to shift our electorate in the United States. And so how do we make sure that not only are we registering them to vote, but then we're getting them to continue to stay engaged, right? I say this with all due respect to you all and where you sit across the pond, but like, we became an independent nation for a reason. And yet very often in America, we treat our elections like we're coronating leaders. Like, oh, great, you got elected. So amazing. See you in 4 years. And it's like, no. Democracy is a full contact sport, everybody. We got to stay engaged. So like, once you get someone elected, you got to hold them accountable to like why you elected them. Make sure your priorities are known, because that's their job. It's their job to hear from their constituents. And then you have to keep staying engaged. And I think we as an organization that Do Something have to iterate that approach, right? We can't just register young people to vote and then send them off in the boat to figure out how to navigate democracy. We've got to keep them practicing and flexing that civic engagement muscle. So I'm really excited about that work. I mentioned to you that climate justice is a huge issue for Gen Z, right? And for all of us, right? It's 60 degrees here in February in New York today, which is astounding and it's evidence, right, of climate change. We had over almost 4,000 young people share with us through our youth map of climate injustice, what are the stories of how climate injustice impacting themselves and their community? And what do they hope would be better and different as a result of changes that could happen either from a policy or regulatory perspective? And so it's really exciting to see young people not only saying, you know, calling out the problem, because I don't want that. I don't want the kind of trauma porn, if you will, of like triggering young people to share their stories, but actually then saying affirmatively, what do they want to see differently as it relates to climate, you know, food access, water insecurity, you know, storms that are impacting their community. And then we can leverage that to help them advocate to the those in power to really push and change society. So I'm excited about that work and some of the work that came out of that See Us, Hear Us campaign that we did in partnership with GM. You know, a lot of excitement around, and this is where we started the conversation, our work in the STEM field, right? And really thinking about how to work with micro influencers like Alexis Williams to help us spread the word about the importance of equity in STEM education, or Aditi Mayer, who helped us think about how to fight climate inaction through the lens of sustainable clothing, right? And so I think it's just what gets me up and excited every day is that we get to do work with young people and that they are the ones pushing us to do better, do more, and fueling that change that we all want to see happen. And so I'm grateful to be a conduit and kind of a vehicle for that. And being able to just keep pushing that at scale.
Those are some great success stories, and wanted to dig into, you know, a little bit deeper in terms of your journey. I want to be careful with this next question because, you know, we're going to ask about navigating the industry of tech and digital activism, which can sometimes be a bit of a boys club in particular, as a woman of color. I want to be careful because I think a lot of times women and folks of color, Black folks in particular, get asked to represent their entire demographic, and that's not what we're asking here, but want to hear about your journey in particular and, you know, not necessarily advice, but sort of like what you would say, you know, when you're speaking to young Black girls about beginning a journey in tech or digital activism, what you'd sort of convey to them based on your experience?
You know, I think my honest answer is, and I did, like I said, candidly to the audience and to you all, like I did not come to this as a tech leader, right? I came to this as a lawyer and as someone passionate about how to leverage tech for good to help young people change the world. And what I would say is to young Black girls in particular, but to all listeners, is like, one, right, and it starts with us and our own understanding of self, which I think is part of how we got to this moment where the need for COVID clarity was even more important, is like, think about what motivates you to do good in the world, then figure out how the us relates to that, right? Like, so if you don't have those connections inherently, because I don't, and I didn't, I came to this company not having deep relationships in the tech sector, think about who you are connected to, who can help you get those inroads, right? And be clear about how your desire and your kind of personal mission statement about changing the world helps you get proximate to those people. I grew up, right, in an era where I didn't have a phone in my hand every day, and now young people do. So they've got tools online, be it LinkedIn or otherwise, where they can get connected to the people who can help open up some of those doors and fuel those journeys. But they have to be clear about what it is they're trying to achieve and why they want to achieve that. And so then they can use, again, tech for good to be able to get more proximate to those communities. I think I would also just lift up again the Make STEM 100% campaign that we are still running right now and thinking about, if you're a young leader, right? If I'm talking to a young high school girl, do you have access to the academic opportunities that are going to position you to get into the tech sector? And if not, how do you talk to your leaders in the school community, to your parents and those, you know, in positions of power and trust vis-a-vis you to get access to that, right? There are plenty of great both after school opportunities and nonprofits like Girls Who Code, et cetera, who are doing this work. How do you get proximate to those networks of people who want to break those ceilings and break those barriers? But, you know, what I would most importantly say is gone are the days of shouting into the wind that you can't achieve. It's now about like getting clear, getting your personal mission statement clear, and then figuring out how you can break the ceiling yourself.
Could you tell us about your work with Chief and how that actually led to DoSomething.org?
So it's interesting, right? So Chief is a membership organization for executive women, right? And so grateful for the opportunity to join this network and kind of sisterhood of women who are breaking ceilings in so many different ways. And just like anything else, as kind of even goes back to the question you last asked me, it's like, then how do I tap into that network of executive leaders who are there and are really excited about fueling the journey of other Black or other women, not even just Black women? How do I then make sure that I'm tapping into that network intentionally and strategically, right? Because just like any other networking opportunity, it requires work. You've got to lean in and both ask and offer, right? You're asking for help when you need it, but you're also offering to help others with some of what they're going through. And so it's been interesting. I joined Chief in August of 2022. So when I had a much clearer sense of my own leadership here at Do Something, what was I looking for and what did I need? And then really excited about how I can tap into that network to be both an agent for change for others, but also help hopefully have those who are in positions of power and senior leadership suites help me be successful too.
What would you say is your biggest frustration or challenge in the work that you do right now in your particular sector?
I mean, I have so many challenges there's so many opportunities, right? I think that's what's exciting. So yeah. I try not to be deficit-minded in my approach. You're getting me on a sunny Valentine's Day and I'm feeling very optimistic and very hopeful. Yeah. And I would say I genuinely am fueled by the passion, energy, and fervent push for change led by young people, right? And so the work that we are doing has to ladder up into how do we prepare young people to be successful civic leaders and stewards of society in meaningful ways, right? We are at this pivotal inflection point where it does feel like a little bit of doom and gloom, but also so much optimism because we're like, let's all stop, let's pause, let's focus. Like, what is it that we're trying to achieve as a society, as individuals? And then how does that like push us to do things drastically differently? And what I'd say is that reexamination, that COVID clarity, that, you know, mirror gazing moment has to happen. Like I get nervous daily that it's not happening, right? Because all of us in our push to like resume normalcy are forgetting the quiet time when we had to sit still and focus, as painful as it was, as much loss and death and uncertainty as there were, you know, in the peak of 2020 to 2022, we're in a moment now where like the gaze has to open up again, but with much more intentionality. And what I really want us to be clear about is like from Do Something's vantage point, nice volunteerism, respectfully, that's a thing of the past. We've got to push for more systemic change. Two, like I said, there are more young people coming of age in America to participate in our democracy. I need them to understand why it matters, right? So like the stats that show how skeptical young people are of democracy and of systems and structures is a problem, right? If we don't actually get young people to fundamentally understand how democracy works, and more importantly, to claim it as their own, good, bad, and ugly, like push to make it better, push to make it reflective and inclusive. If we don't get that to happen, both at Do Something and societally, we have a problem, right? Like we have a big societal problem. And so I need to push for that. And that takes resources and it takes time. And so it's interesting because we have our COVID clarity as an organization of like how we're going to move this path forward. And yet we're in this uncertain economic climate where everybody's like, pause. We got to like freeze everything. And I'm like, no. Now is the time to invest even more to make sure that we get over this hump, that we get to the other side. And so I would say back to your question, that's one of the challenges we face is like, we are clear about our vision and our North Star and how we want to help young people change the world. And it requires us to have resources and investments and support to do that. And the reality is, and I don't say this as a guilting factor, but it says reality, kids are watching, right? The young people are literally watching and they are saying, wait, are you not going to invest in us? Do you not believe in us? Because that's what you keep saying. Or put your money where your mouth is. And so this moment of like matching the resources, the investment with the opportunity. And so that's, to me, what I'm clear-eyed and dogmatically focused on. It's like, how do we get the resources we need to and push, you know, for the societal change we need to truly allow young people to change the world in ways big and small.
Yeah. Just want to take a moment to appreciate that you've repeated the phrase COVID clarity a couple times. And I think, no, but it's great because I think we, like, you know, we started our agency, I think, as a result of COVID clarity. And it was just, it was such a powerful moment to see, you know, a lot of friends and professional connections, like, take a beat, think about what they want to, you know, really want to do and why they really want to do it. And then dive into something and create something beautiful. And I think, you know, we sort of sat down and said, all right, who do we want to work for? You know, like mission driven, you know, charities and nonprofits and tech for good startups and things like that. And what do we want to do for them? We want to do absolute, you know, award winning creative that's going to help them, you know, push forward their mission and connect with their audience and things like that. And like, I think that a lot of our initial clients and the broader sector feels that, you know, they feel that energy that's born out of that COVID clarity. And so we really try to like live that mission and, you know, help our clients' missions as well. So yeah, just that idea that, you know, taking that beat and realizing what your purpose is so important. And yeah, I just really appreciate that.
Use the phrase, use it, everybody use it, COVID clarity, but then actually practice it, right? Because I think that's the challenge is like, when the going gets hard, we all just want to revert back to what we know and what's comfortable and what's, I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but what's easy, right? Because it's safe and it's accessible to us. And I think all of us, I've got my Corona Chronicles where I've like, wrote that, like, did you remember that you did that? Like you were wiping down your groceries and like all these crazy things we did. Yeah. But then also like, what did we learn from the moment? And so I would just encourage us all to like, as painful, maybe it's too close to the source in this moment, what does it mean to like call on that and use it to like clarify the future?
I've been thinking about that a lot too. Like, how do I get back to some of those like practices that, you know, I took long walks and runs and things like that. And I meditated and I read more and I, you know, called up old friends and family members and things like that and connected with them, you know, more deeply than I ever had. And like, just trying to create space for some of those practices that I think really served me well in the modern context where, you know, things have just kind of gotten back to quote unquote, you know, the new normal. So yeah, something to think about there.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think trying to get the best of both worlds, like, you know, being able to see people in person again, but then not just resorting back to old habits. Yeah, it's such a tricky tightrope to walk.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's take us over to the lightning round now. These are kind of more fun, off-the-cuff questions with like short answers, just to get to know you a bit more personally. So yeah, kicking us off, you know, what kind of tech stack do you work with? What's been a game-changing tech product in your life?
I know this was a hard one. I was like, do they mean my personal life? Do they mean my do something life? And, you know, I would say as a digital first organization, for us, like we are in this moment, as I've talked about, of like modernizing our own tech and thinking about how digital engagement works for us, right? So we're using a lot of products that help us get closer to young people, meeting them where they are. One of the biggest platforms we use currently is Twilio, right? And I talked about this notion of like SMSing and getting, back then was like, that was the innovation, was like getting SMSing for young people. But now we're thinking about, how do we get that collective built in through products like Minecraft or Discord and really getting closer to young people where they are? And so that's what's exciting for us. While we're still, you know, I could get in the weeds of like all of the tech we use to fuel this platform, but I don't think that's going to be really exciting to you or your listeners. So I'll close with it there.
No, yeah, fair. We've had some wonderful answers to that. Everything from work through to one person is just like, it's a mechanical keyboard. Yeah, that's the thing that's changed my game-changing tech product. You're like, fair play.
Exactly. Well, I told you earlier about how I've been dictating more. So if that counts, I'm like, just get this message out so that I don't have to keep typing. How about that?
100% counts. We sort of touched on it before. What in your mind is a tech problem that tech can't solve for us and why?
You know, I think the honest answer is like the human connection. Like I think on the heels of our COVID clarity, I'll just keep saying it now because you validated it for me. We're missing some of that, right? And I think you see it even with Gen Z and even increasingly Gen Alpha looking and turning away from some of the social media platforms or at least taking breaks from them. So they think about like, I want to call the person on the phone or I want to go for the walk. And so how do we think about, you know, how do we get that human connection again is something I think tech can't completely solve for us because we're missing more of the in real life, if you will.
Yeah. Our favorite question of the lightning round, tech for bad. What's the evilest application of tech that you've seen out there?
Again, talk about tricky questions. I was like, I don't know that I know the evilest, like, right? Tech, I think it's more about when tech is any platform, so I'm not going to name names, is used in a way that is not about building connection, is about tearing people down, is about bullying, is about, you know, the harm that is happening to kids online. To me, that's the evil. And that's not the way those products were designed, and it wasn't the way that they were intended to be used. And so I think it's more about, again, that human connection and remembering all of us. You know, I recently had an opportunity to be at a conversation with child psychologist Lisa Damore, who spends a lot of time talking about young people and like mental health and how to navigate the time they're in. And she said this phrase that was so powerful. It's like, we are all so raw coming out of the last 3 years that, like, on some level, we've lost our ability to comport ourselves with decency and decorum and appropriateness. And some of that is fueled by products that were not designed for that use, right? And so what I want us to think about is, like, then how do we change terms of service and use case to make sure that we really are centering, again, a more constructive societal social contract. And so that's what I would say. It's like, it's not about the platforms or the applications themselves. It's about how they're being used for the unintended purpose that I think is the evil, if you will.
Yeah, I think as well, some people who are getting tired of waiting for those big platforms to change are just inventing their own ones, which have built into their algorithms much more like limiting factors on spread of sensationalism and disinformation, and create a more safe environment. And I think that might be something we see over the next few years, is like a real explosion of sort of Gen Z-led social platforms that you know, I don't want to wait for insert major platform here to fix the environment. I'm just going to create my own one. You know, I think Be Real was sort of harnessed a bit of that, but didn't have the longevity. I'm really interested to see what the next massive platform is, and I feel like it's really going to be focused in on, hey, all the research is in and mental health is impacted by most of the big players, and they're working to make it better, but they haven't fixed it. So, you know, here's the new platform that has built into it those sort of psychological safeguards.
I think you raise a good point, if I could just like jump on that for a second. And as we, I know it's supposed to be rapid. What you're describing, though, is also the reality, like the limitations of tech are that it's built by humans, right? And so it replicates, might even exacerbate some of the same biases and power structures that exist in our society, right? And so again, back to where we started the conversation, it's an important reflection moment to then think about, how do we diversify the field and lift up those, you know, especially those historically marginalized voices, to ensure that we're building tech to meet the needs of this new generation of young people, to this new society that is more diverse and more clear than previous ones would have been. And then think about how then we are leveraging. I love the point you raise about lessons learned and like the data to inform the future of tech.
Slogan for a lot of folk in tech space is garbage in, garbage out. And I actually think you could probably, for a lot of AI, change that to white male bias in, white male bias out. That's probably going to be the big thing we're grappling with a lot of machine learning over the next year or so, is this was developed in a room full of white men. So that has some problems with it. Sorry, I've taken us totally off course on this lightning round.
No,
I was a contributor. It was a really good dialogue. No worries. And now I have new words, right? So like, I often laugh with my colleagues, especially my product and engineering team. I'm like, oh, I learned a new phrase today. And they're like, oh, did you? So garbage in, garbage out will be the phrase that I could whip out this week and sound a little bit more adjacent to the sector.
Any conversation on AI or machine learning, that's the one that they always quote. Feel free. We'll be stealing COVID clarity. So it's been an exchange here.
And Googleicious as well.
Googleicious is just incredible.
Oh, my 12-year-old is going to be so mad. But you know what? The upside is, she says that I never talk about her. I only talk about my adult son. So I'm like, well, I did. I talked about you, Googleicious.
Careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
To be fair, it actually kind of leads quite nicely onto our next question, which is, you know, if you could dream up a new tech product and sort of wave a magic wand tomorrow, what problem would it solve, and for whom?
This was a hard one. I was like, you have my very like cerebral lawyer brain. I was like, I'm going to create a tech product. My honest answer is going to be totally on brand. It's like, I would love to have a gaming for good app, right? Where we get young people kind of thinking about, you know, concrete solutions to the big challenges facing our society, and allowing them to collaborate in the gaming world to be able to affect change. And I don't know how to code that solution, but like, is there a way that not only are they like, you're finding your tribe in this game, and it's like, let's say that the challenge is climate injustice, how do you all code solutions that you then can send directly to your elected officials and get them to understand and realize in real time would be powerful. Mm-hmm. So someone's going to listen to this, hopefully, and have mm-hmm. that good idea. And then they're going to call me and we're going to figure out how to solve that together.
That's a good one. It strikes us that you're getting a ton of data from, you know, all the young activists you're working with and just the partner organization, things like that. So super keen to ask you this question about what's your big prediction for the tech for good digital activism space in the year to come?
I mean, I think I've said this before, and I really am. I'm betting big on Gen Z and Gen mm-hmm. Alpha, right? These generations are passionate about social change like no other, yeah. right? And again, I think like to the point of big societal moments push us forward, and you get that COVID clarity and people realize you're getting to the next cataclysmic moment, right? And so I do think they're more aware of the impact of technology and how it is helping and hurting their lives, and that they are going to push to make big changes in the sector, right? And we've always, you know, thought about tech and tech for good and how it can be used for good. Like I go back to the being in the vanguard of SMSing and getting, you know, we get hundreds of thousands of young people to come to our platform every year, which is like bananas, right? As a concept, right? That even in this day and age of all of the noise that's happening online, young people will come to dosomething.org and know I will get to that platform and it's going to provide opportunities for me to do social good. You know, I think really getting to a place then when we can figure out that gaming and that solve of tech for good through platforms where young people are already convening and finding community is what the next generation or those, not next because they're here, those generations are going to push us to do. And I think between that and like being the truth tellers, right, really calling out what's working, what's not working, and leveraging their power, right, as consumers and as users. And I hate my colleagues. I'm always like, they're not users, they're humans, they're people, right? But like to speak tech for a minute, the users are going to say, this ain't working for me anymore. And I think once that happens at scale and you get them to push the sector to be responsive to their needs, that's when you're going to see like the biggest societal push forward. And so I'm excited about that.
My favorite anecdote about, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but my favorite anecdote about Gen Z and their activism and just their general vibe, I think it was in a tweet that I saw. And I saw this on the ground during the protests. I was in Philadelphia during the, you know, first few lockdowns and went to some of the protests in Philadelphia in like June 2020 and July, was that Gen Z will run and pick up a smoke grenade and throw it back at the National Guard, but they're very, very nervous about asking a significant other to a dance. But it was just sort of like touching on like they're these incredible activists and they're so informed and they're so engaged. But also, you know, the circumstances of their lives have, you know, like you mentioned this earlier, like have made them in some cases like a little bit socially awkward or just challenge or things like that. But then like those two tensions are really in play here where they're just kind of figuring their way through this insane world that's kind of locked them up for like a year and a half. But they're also pushing through it and they're being activists at the same time. So it was, you know, a little bit in jest, but sort of I think like captured the kind of tension there really, really, you know, hilariously and poignantly as well. So
I love that. And I could even see that visual. So you just painted a perfect visual for me of like, yes, I'm going to get this grenade and I'm going to blow this thing up, or I'm going to pull down this statue. But it's like, hey, do you want to like go to the movies? It's like,
totally.
They're like, is there an app?
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, young people, you're going to be young people. I remember having exactly that same terror.
Yeah.
Like school discos when you're like 15, you're like, oh, should I go ask that girl to dance?
Yeah.
Last question, lightning round. What's worked well for you in terms of building a career that kind of balances profit and purpose? You know, you're kind of almost at the perfect intersection of both in terms of, you know, you're working for one of the biggest change makers out there. How have you balanced that in terms of, you know, obviously having to pay the bills, but also wanting to do something that, you know, genuinely brings purpose and meaning to your life?
You know, it's such a great question. I think the honest answer is holding true to my values, right? And being clear. I mentioned earlier when I was talking to the young Black girl who I hope was listening, but also all young people about finding their way in tech, is being clear about your purpose and your own personal mission statement, right? And that's not to say it's like this glossy set of words you put up on a shelf or on a website and you just leave it there. It's like reevaluating all the time. Why are you doing the things you're doing? And are they actually moving the needle consistent with your own theory of change? And like for me, this is going to sound a little bit nostalgic and maybe romanticized on Valentine's Day, but like when the opportunity to interview for the role of CEO of Do Something came to be, I was like, me? Like, no, that's not me, right? Like that's for someone else. And so, you know, always being clear, I kept saying to myself, well, wait, Do Something is completely aligned with my own theory of change, right? And is completely aligned with how I view the need to be proximate to young people and helping fuel their journey. But it didn't come in the package I expected it to, right? And so just being very clear always with myself of like, am I using all of the tools in my toolbox to affect change and create power and space for others who wouldn't have access to it? And if so, then I'm fulfilling my own personal mission statement while helping fulfill do some things. And so that's hard, right? Having those moments of personal accountability are hard to do in the midst of just doing the work, if you will. But I do try to hold up that own mirror to myself every once in a while and just make sure that I'm living my values and that I am really centering the voices of young people, because that's why I'm here. And so I would encourage others to do the same.
Well, as you said, it's a sunny Valentine's Day, both in London and New York, and this has been a rather empowering and uplifting conversation. Today we're joined by Denora Getacho, CEO and president, chief executive officer of Do Something. I just gave you another title.
Someone the other day was like, Dr. Getacho, and I was like, that's my title.
But I'll take it.
Chief executive officer at DoSomething.org. Denora, we really appreciate your time today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's such a great opportunity and such a rich conversation. And thanks for both provoking my thinking, but also giving me the opportunity to talk about Do Something in the work that we're doing to fuel young people to change the world. I'm excited about the path ahead for us as we celebrate this milestone 30th anniversary and all the ways in which we're going to leverage tech for good to get to the other side.
And bit of a silly question, we've been talking about DoSomething.org, but where can folks find you all on the interwebs? Where's the easiest?
There we go. So straightforward, DoSomething.org. If you type that into that search engine, you're going to find us, and we can't wait to meet you there and help fuel young people's journey to change the world.
And we'll be sure to add that to the episode description and all your social handles and things like that as well, so folks can find you easily. And as always, folks listening, please like, subscribe, share, blast this out to your networks. We'd love to have more incredible guests like Denora on the show, and we'd love to keep us going. So give us that 5-star rating if you've enjoyed listening today.